pitch the ball to Bell. That's upfield. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. Rebound! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
Okay, welcome back to the podcast. Appreciate you joining us today. As always, you can check everything out at pistolsfiringblog.com, or you can listen to our podcasts on iTunes. Today we have Anthony Slater from the Ocala joining us to talk a little Oklahoma State hoops. Just got a big win against Texas Tech. So we will talk about that, a little bit of the Missouri and Texas A&M games as well, and might even get into recruiting a little bit. So let's go to the podcast. Okay, Anthony Slater, welcome back to the podcast. Appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, appreciate you having me back.
Okay, big win. I guess we're taping this on a Tuesday night. It'll run on Wednesday on National Signing Day. But big win for OSU against Texas Tech tonight.
Yeah, I guess you could call it big. I mean, they are now 0-9 in the conference. So I don't know if you can really constitute it as a big win.
Well, I say big because they haven't won on the road in conference in 2 years. So.
I agree. I don't know if you call that a road environment. It wasn't exactly Cameron Indoor out there. Half the crowd's Michael Cobbins supporters, but yeah, it was a good win. They played well end to end. I felt like my Markell Brown was great. LeBron Nash played in control, and nobody seemed to play a bad game. You couldn't single out anyone with having a bad game.
You know, it's really interesting because I was writing some stuff today, and I was looking at each individual player and the kind of season they're having and how everybody's progressing. And it's almost like you look at all the guys that OSU has on this team, and if you look at each individual guy, you're like, God, they should be better than 11-11 right now, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it kind of feel like that?
Yeah, but if you look at each individual guy and each individual talent, you go, oh, freshman, sophomore, first year junior, the freshman. I mean, to the point, yeah, I mean, they have a lot of talent, but isn't it all really young talent and inconsistent?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think the inconsistency, and you see that personified the most in Nash. I mean, it's it's so up and down. It's up against Missouri. It's down against A&M. It's back up against Tech. You know, you don't know It's tough to know what you're getting night in and night out from somebody like him.
I mean, their most consistent player, at least, I mean, and he was inconsistent early in the year, but as of late would have to be Markell Brown, and he's a sophomore, which, I mean, that's a lot of experience on this team to be a sophomore. So if each freshman, you know, Cobbins, Williams, Nash, experiences the sophomore growth that Markell Brown's had, he's got a pretty good team next year. Maybe even a tournament team, I think. I mean, other people may look at it differently, but
who's going to be the leader on this team next year, do you think?
Markell Brown.
Over Nash?
Just personality-wise, it would have to be. Ford has made that clear every time he talks. Markell Brown's pretty active, you know, vocal in practice and even on the court. I'm not saying that he'll be their best player technically because, I mean, Nash is obviously their best maybe NBA talent. But a player like Markell Brown, I just think he can lead. And you have to look at Marcus Smart coming in. We don't really know what he's going to be. I'm not going to overhype a player like, you know, Nash was kind of overhyped. People didn't really know what they were getting. But, I mean, you've probably seen a little bit of Smart. He seems like a natural born leader out there.
Yeah, he does. I think it's tough. I mean, I think it's really hard to come in as a freshman and be the leader of a team, especially with a group of guys that you have kind of forming now with all the freshmen and sophomores they have right now. Or I guess Williams and Cobbins aren't sophomores, but they're two-year guys. And those guys have built relationships and they know each other. And you can't really bring a guy in that's going to say, hey, you know, this is my team or whatever. I don't I don't think that works necessarily. I'm not saying Marcus Smart's going to be bad. I think he's going to be great, but I don't know that he would be the leader of the team.
Yeah. Well, the thing with this team, it wasn't technically like off the record, but I had talked to Keaton Page at a time when I wasn't necessarily portraying myself as a media member. And he was kind of openly talking about how, you know, a lot of teams will say, oh, this is the closest team I've ever been on. You know, they'll say it to me. But he's like, honestly, this is as close a team as I've ever been on. It's almost uncanny how close everyone is off the court. I mean, that hasn't necessarily translated to chemistry on the court. But apparently these guys they really mesh well together. And I think if they start getting wins, I think that might translate on the court.
Yeah, and I think it's apparent. You know, one moment that I kind of picked out that was really interesting to me was it was at the end of the Missouri game, and OSU was up, I think, 3 or 4. And LeBron got a steal, and he was coming down, and he only had one guy to beat. And all of a sudden, he looks up and gives it up to Brian Williams on an alley-oop. And that was just something that, I mean, Williams was obviously open, but it wasn't like – Nash had to give it up, but he let Williams finish it and kind of put the dagger in Missouri. I thought that was kind of a cool moment.
That was, yeah, it was kind of like a signature play for him. You know, like, I got 27 and I know I'm on national TV and I'm the freshman that's, you know, getting hyped, and I could go for, you know, my 20, maybe even and one for 30 points, but, you know, my teammates open, I might as well just throw it up to him. And I mean, you saw it tonight with the, that pass off the glass to Markell Brown.
That was, you know,
that was a great play.
That was awesome.
It seems like all of his assists are like, he's a pretty good passer.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about Markell for a second, because I know you got rolled a little bit for suggesting that Markell might be one of the best dunkers in Oklahoma State history the other day on Twitter.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Well, I actually wrote tonight, and you know me, of all people, is not one to admit this, but I think he's going to make a run at Desmond for the best Oklahoma State dunker in school history.
Was dunker?
I was just saying,
I mean, he's got to be getting in that conversation, because that was probably the one against Missouri, the second one. Man, that's the best dunk I've ever seen in person. That was violent.
Was it
he just snapped?
Was it better than Blake Griffin's dunk on Perkins last night?
No, I don't think so.
But see, the thing that
I was like on my couch, like, I was like visibly shaking from that dunk. I was like, what? It like scared me. I don't know.
But Griffin didn't even get the rim. I mean, he barely touched the rim.
I mean, yeah, we don't have to technically classify it as a dunk. I don't care what it was. That was crazy. I mean, just because he didn't touch the rim, I mean, I'm just judging it on the play I saw on TV was nuts.
I did like Markell's because, like you said, it was violent. He came down with the whole rim and Pressy.
I think they're comparable.
I think they are, definitely. And especially just because Markell's a much smaller guy than Griffin is. Although I guess Pressy isn't as big as Kendrick Perkins. But
yeah, Markell's a freak out there, man.
Yeah, and he's become, I mean, the last...
Oh, great player.
He had the one dunk, I guess, last year against Harvard in the NIT that was pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
But he's really taken off, no pun intended, this year in terms of highlight reels. Did you think the technical after the second dunk was warranted on last Wednesday?
No. I mean, I thought that was a really bad call. I mean, I could see it. It's really in the game, and you want to kind of, like, smooth some things down, you know, like, you know, a lot of referees kind of want to like calm the game down early, but I mean, you can't, a team that's struggling, they're already depleted, like have a depleted roster, and they've got the number two team in their house. They're trying to come make a late run, and you eject one of their best players with like 5 minutes left, you know, down three. I don't see how you make that call.
Yeah. And it seemed weird. obviously you were there and I wasn't, but it didn't seem like he was that demonstrative after, you know, after the dunk. He kind of turned around and stared, but he didn't really say anything or make any motions or anything.
I mean, you saw the first dunk. He was like screaming in the guy's face, and that was right near where I was. He was screaming in the guy's face. They didn't give him a technical on the first dunk.
People
got it on the block.
Yeah, people keep saying that it was on the dunk, but it was on defense that he picked up the first technical.
Yeah, he blocked it, and even Ford was explaining after the game. I guess he blocked it, and the ref said he blocked it and said, you know, get the shit out of here. And they teed him up right there, and then you as a ref, you got to know late in the game. The guy's already got a tee. Especially, I mean, maybe if he did scream at the guy, but he really just stared for a second. He didn't even – I'm not saying Markel Brown wouldn't have screamed at the guy. He just didn't even have time, because by the time he landed and looked at the guy, he had already teed him up and thrown him.
Yeah. I know we're kind of talking about dunking and Markel and stuff,
yeah.
But what happened on Saturday? You know, Oklahoma State goes to A&M. A&M's not that good. They're missing three starters, and it just seemed like it was almost like OSU lost only because they were playing on the road. It was a really weird game.
If you remember, they were out playing them early, and it was almost like, you know, you felt like they should be up by a little bit more. And then suddenly Cobbins had like three fouls, and Nash had three fouls. And Suchek was like on a 10th straight minute in the game, and that guy gets gassed after like 2 minutes. So it was – I just think – the foul trouble hurt them. And then when they were back in the game, it just seemed on defense, they were really focused on like, okay, I have to jump straight up. Like, I can't touch this guy. I think that really affected him. And then A&M the defense was laying off A&M. So they just started hitting shots.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt like watching that game that you're like, OSU is the better team here. And yet, in the end, they didn't. I mean, obviously the score didn't prove it. They didn't play better, but it just. I mean, it seems like Oklahoma State's going to beat A&M by 15 or 20 in Gallagher, Iowa when they play there.
You would think. I mean, but that game, like I said, I mean, they had five players that they were comfortable playing that game, because Guerrero had been struggling lately. Suchek should be redshirting.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second.
He's
somebody, and it was funny tonight because one of the announcers said, I don't think other teams fear Suchek as someone who protects the rim. And
I mean, he just fouls. I mean, he's going to get two free throws. But.
Well, I feel bad for the dude because you can tell he understands basketball and he knows how to play. He's just not – I guess he's just not used to the speed of the game over here.
He's not, and the thing is, he's really adjusting to the game, and they had planned to redshirt him before, you know, when they had 10 guys that, like, it was almost too deep early in the year. I mean, the plan was to redshirt him. He, you know, he's going into practice early and doing, like, you know, 2 hours of weightlifting and all this, and then practicing really hard. And game days were almost used as his rest days because they were starting to get him more and more in shape. But, I mean, now that he's playing, he's just gassed all the time. He needs at least another year. And he just fouls because, like you said, he doesn't really know the game. He's just kind of lazy with it. And, I mean, when he's in, don't you feel like he should shoot a little bit more?
Yeah, I think he should. He's not great at catching the ball in the right spot and getting his shot up. You know, you saw tonight he had a – I don't know, it was about a 19-footer at the top of the key, and he nailed it, but he's not good at getting in the right position to get his shots off, I don't think.
Yeah, and I almost think when he's in, he's not even thinking about shooting. He's, like, so, like, kind of wide-eyed, like, need to be here, need to set this screen, need to get back on defense, try not to foul, you know, do this, do that, and it's, like, he catches it, and, like, he doesn't even realize no one's on him at the top of the key, and he's just, like, oh, I'm supposed to swing it. Like, dude, you're wide open, and, like, you're known for shooting. Just, like, put it up.
Yeah. He needs a year or two. And I think that – I mean,
it's not his fault. He shouldn't be getting exposed like this because, like, this was his year to do what Brian Williams and Michael Cobbins did last year.
Right, and you saw how much that helped those guys. But it seems like he can be somebody who is a amazing sixth man or maybe even a starter someday for OSU, you know, down the road.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you even see it. I mean, he's 4 or 6 shooting this year, which isn't obviously a lot of numbers, but he hits the three. I mean, he can, well, his jump shot looks great. Him and Page are probably the two that hit the most.
Yeah. And
I mean, as a pick and pop player, I think he could be a solid role player.
Well, speaking of shooting, what's going on with Markel Brown's 3-point stroke?
Man, I don't know. I tweeted, I don't remember what game it was, but I tweeted, I think it was the OU game when he was just clanging him.
Yeah, and then the Baylor game was the next game, and he hit like 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah, I remember I tweeted, like, Markel Brown should never shoot another 3, I think is the exact thing I tweeted. Because, didn't it seem like that at the time? And I think since then, I looked up the other day, he's like 7 of 13 or something. It's like, okay, maybe not.
Yeah,
it's good. And it looks good when he's shooting.
It does. It looks great. And if he can, I mean, if he figures that out, that's another level for him because...
That's an NBA. I mean, he figures that out. He's gone his way to the league, maybe.
Yeah, I agree because he's the type of guy that's athletic enough to, like we've talked about, get to the lane, get to the rim. Obviously, he can jump and play defense.
Yeah.
But if he can figure out a jump shot, that'll take him to, you know, become, I think, someday an all Big 12 player.
Maybe even next year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's
maybe,
it's,
I mean, this, I mean, if, okay, let's say he continues playing really well for the rest of this Big 12 season. Does he get second team honorable mention? I mean, possible. If he keeps putting up games like today, what do you have? 30 points, 7 boards, 13 at the line. Plus, he plays great defense and he's all over the highlight reel, so like people know his name.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think if he has a couple more 20 or 25 point games, he could sneak. I think he would definitely be honorable mention then. And maybe sneak onto the second team.
How many teams do they just do 2 teams? They do 3 teams. You can sneak on that, maybe.
I think football is 3 and basketball is 2, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think they do 2 teams and like an all freshman team.
Yeah,
something like that.
That might be wrong though. They might do 3 teams. But yeah, I think that, man, that's so big for him going into, you know, his junior and senior season to be able to figure out that jump shot. And we're always, you know, we're always talking about, oh, this team's young, wait till next year, et cetera, et cetera. But it really is shaping up like you've got this great core, and if you can start adding to it and you don't keep losing guys like you lost a Fred Gulley and a Reggie Dow,
I don't see them losing anyone. Maybe Guerrero would be like the only one I could see.
But what about Nash? I mean, are we worried about him at all?
So at this point, because they're playing well, the Missouri game really helped his confidence. Everyone seems to be buying in now. At least that's my, you know, every time I see him media days or, you know, stuff like that, it seems like it's a cohesive team. I don't see anyone transferring. Nash, the only issue, I mean, as if he suddenly thinks he's ready for the league. But the way he talks is because he's friends with Marcus Smart. He played high school with him. Or they weren't on the same team, but they're from the same area, so they played against each other in AAU and stuff. It seems like, I mean, when he talks, he's always talking, oh, next year, you know, I think we're going to be better. Like, he'll mention next year like he's going to be here for sure. So.
Well, that's a good sign. I wrote today, and I think it's difficult for somebody who, you know, he had, what was it, 28 against Missouri. And if you see him put up, let's say he has 32 against Baylor on Saturday and they win, and then he goes out and plays really well, you know, in Lawrence, even though OSU gets beat, you're starting to, you know, put together some building blocks for a decent freshman NBA resume. And somebody like him, I could just see it, you know. You get past the season, the NBA looks pretty alluring, and all of a sudden he's getting his name called in the second round of the draft. And I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's something that I could definitely see happening.
I agree, but I think he to leave after your freshman year, and I think he realizes this, you'd have to, or you'd want to be like, okay, you're going to be a lottery pick. Like, you're getting guaranteed money. If you're second round, that your contract's not even guaranteed. So, I mean, you come back. I'd say right now, I would put him coming back at 90%, 95 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would too. I'm almost rooting for him to have these 15 to 16 point games and not the 30 to 40 point outbursts.
True, but you don't want him to have a really rocky end of the year where he's just mad at everything that happened. But I know what you're saying. If as an OSU fan, I could see you not wanting him to just, you know, explode for some like 45 and an upset of Baylor and then like tell the ESPN sideline reporter, I'm taking my talents to the league, baby. Or just he just explodes in the Big 12. Hey, how about this? Would you take this? If he just exploded in the Big 12 tourney and won the Big 12 tourney to send them to the NCAAs, but then announced he would go into the league?
Yeah, I would take that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think...
This is completely hypothetical because that's not happening.
Well, you know, I was actually looking at it the other day. The Big 12 tournament is different this year because in the past, your top four teams got a bye, and now the top six teams do.
You know what? I think OSU could have a nice run if they get – I mean, obviously, let's say they're between 7 and 10, so they have one of those first-round games. You can win one of those because that'll be against, you know, either OU, Tech – A&M or something. You could win one of those. And then if you get lucky to maybe match up with Missouri in the second round, I think they match up pretty well against Missouri. They're small. Nash kind of has a mismatch against that team. I mean, that's winnable. I don't know if you're beating Baylor or Kansas, especially in Kansas City.
Well, but what if Iowa State upsets one of, I guess you would play. I can't believe we're talking about this.
I know. This is bad, but
you could play Iowa State if they're one of the top four teams. I mean, and right now it looks like they're gonna
beat Iowa State, and you could beat Iowa State. You know what? I think the worst matchup for OSU is in the conference is Kansas State. They're just so physical.
Yeah,
and it just becomes a grinded out game. There's fouls called everywhere. Everyone's in foul trouble, and that's how Kansas State wants it. And then everything gets grinded into a half court offense with like pick and rolls and stuff, and they really don't match up well against Kansas State.
Yeah, I agree, and I think Baylor, if they want to be, is the same way because they're so much bigger. They're not that physical though. They seem kind of more, we want to out athletic you. We want to throw alley oops. We want to run.
Yeah.
We could pound it down your throat, but we don't want to.
Interested in this Saturday.
You're interested in this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, Baylor at home. I want to see how they respond because they got smoked by Baylor and they know it.
Yeah.
Like, they were clearly kind of embarrassed by that game.
Yeah. Baylor's just so talented. I know beating Missouri was great and that was a great win, but Missouri isn't, to me,
they're not. Baylor's a better team, I think.
They're better than. You think they're better than.
I think Baylor's better than Missouri. I don't even know if they're better. I just think OSU matches up against Missouri much better than they match up against Baylor.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess if you look at Missouri beating Baylor at Baylor, you would say Missouri's a better team. But I just don't – I don't know. And maybe this is just from us watching Baylor beat Oklahoma State by 41 points. But – I mean, they looked unbelievable in that game, and I just don't know. I don't know how OSU closes that gap. You know,
I agree, and I mean, if I had to pick, obviously I'd take Baylor Saturday. But the only thing is, it's going to be a Saturday afternoon game. The team's going to be kind of confident coming off a road win. I think it's going to be a decent crowd because Kansas State on a Saturday afternoon was a pretty good crowd, and they're going to come out juiced because they were like legitimately embarrassed. Like I said about that Baylor game. And I think early on, I think OSU might get up early. But I'd still pick Baylor in the game. But I'm interested to see how it starts.
Yeah, it will be interesting. It'll be, that would be a huge, huge win for this team coming off their first road victory in 700 and...
If you can beat two top 10 teams at home in 1 year, I mean...
Yeah. No, I mean, that's... Solid. That's outstanding.
And this team is not... This team is not as bad as its 11-11 record, because they played... I'd have to guess they played the hardest non-conference schedule in the country. Because they didn't really have any, like, just gimme games besides, like, Langston. And then there were, like, two early ones.
Well, and UTSA, except it didn't work out.
Yeah, well, they won it, but barely. I'm just saying that, like, that ended up really skewing their record. Because last year's team, which was, I mean, if you took this year's team as last year's team, I don't know who'd win. Might even be this year's team, but they went into conference play 12-2.
Yeah. I think this year's team is well, they're different teams. I think this year's team is probably better than last year's, though.
This year's, at this point, this year's team has been through so much. Like, I feel like the freshmen are really sophomores. They've, like, almost been through a season already.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're playing all these Big 12 teams, but it's not like conference play is much different. You're playing Pitt and MSG, you know, Alabama at Alabama. You're playing New Mexico, who's good. Stanford's pretty good in MSG. Vautech twice. I mean, you don't play that many good teams usually in non-conference.
Yeah. No, it's brutal, and I agree with Ford that he shouldn't have done it, and he probably won't do it again, definitely not next year.
Yeah, you hear, I heard the guy post-game on the radio tonight, Biggs or whatever, who makes the schedule, said they're playing a much easier preseason schedule next year. They're going to, the only hard thing is a Puerto Rico tournament. They're going to some tournament in Puerto Rico that has a good field, and then Gonzaga at home on New Year's.
Yeah, they should. I mean, you're not gaining anything by playing Pitt and Madison Square Garden and Alabama and all these teams, because – okay, let's say you go out and play 15 pre-conference games and you go 13-2 against, you know, average to below average teams. Well, then all of a sudden you're playing this 18 game. I guess you wouldn't play 15. Let's say you go 11-2. You play 13. Well, then you get into conference and you're playing 18 games, and if you go, I don't know, 10-8 or 11-9, all of a sudden you have 21, 22 wins. You get a win on the road somewhere good. You protect home court. I mean, that's a tournament team.
Yeah, I think if Ford said this year, you need to have, like, double-digit wins going into conference. You want 10 wins. And this year they were 7-6. And the thing was, their six losses, they didn't lose to anyone who didn't have lost to. Like, they should have had the six losses.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what – I think it kind of screwed them, but, I mean, it's really tough in the team. And kind of – you know, it might help in the long run. Thinking of, like, next year, it didn't help this year, obviously. But
yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be a good team this year. I mean, every game – you know, when they lose against Bishop on Saturday, all the other fans will say they're going to suck 5-4. You know how it is. You're one of the leaders of it, huh?
Yeah, I definitely understand. I'm still hanging on to the Ford bandwagon. I'm going down with it if it goes down.
Yeah, I don't know. Bill Self's not just sitting at Kansas. Oh, when's that OSU job open? So I don't really know what the plan would be. So, he'll get through next year. I've said it. I mean, we both said it. He'll get through next year at least.
Yeah, at least. And if they keep, you know, if they keep trending upward, there's no reason to go in a different direction. So
if you put me on the spot, I would say they will be a tournament team next year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because in Ford's defense, he's kind of just bottoming out this year and last year even too. So if you're, you know, if he's improving in the next year and the year after, it's like, well, what are you gonna, I mean, are you gonna fire him because he's improving? I don't know. I think once you start improving and you're going in the right direction, that's, you can't get rid of the guy for that.
I mean, don't teams kind of go in for it? I mean, obviously teams like Kentucky that just bring in these 1 year and duns are always good, but I mean, mediocre, you know, middle of the conference teams usually have like kind of 4-year cycles. And this seems like the start of what, you know, 3-4 years from now could be like a really good team if it comes together like it seems like it, you know, could.
Yeah.
So you gotta get them through this cycle. If you know, people transferring all like up from this core and they start struggling, then you gotta start looking at things. But
yeah. Okay, Anthony Slater, appreciate you coming on. Always good to talk Oklahoma State basketball with you, and we will have you on again, if not next week, then the week after.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
All right, see you.